Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Mem Beis. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 6 lines from the top of Daf Mem Beis. The Gemara quotes the Mishnah, V'chein sha'ar kol hanoshim. We had learned in our previous shiur the need for a yevama to wait 3 months after the death of her husband before she could marry or do chalitza with the brother, her husband's surviving brother. The reason for the need for waiting was part of the discussion that we saw in our previous year. We need to establish whether or not the pregnancy that she might have experienced is a pregnancy from the first husband, and if that's the case, so she would be forbidden to do Yibum with the second husband. If after 3 months she shows no signs of pregnancy, so we can say she can then do Yibum or Chalitza. What about other women that had been married? Do they need to wait 3 months? So the Gemara, the Mishnah says, yes, other women as well. Bishlama Yevama Kedamoran. I understand the need for waiting 3 months before a woman marries through Yibum, as we have already said. Eloshar kol hanoshim amai. Why is there the need of waiting 3 months after a woman becomes a divorcee or a widow outside of the context of Yibum? In order to answer this, you'll notice we have triangles. There are two approaches to this. And this we've indicated under the Mivneh heading on the side of the Gemara. Hezberim lahamtona gimel chadoshim b'shar noshim. Hezberim explanations for the need for waiting 3 months with regard to the marriage of other women. Other meaning outside the context of Yibum. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Shmuel. Mishum di Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, Lyos Luchol Lukim Ulzaracho Acharecha. The Rashi says, Ulzaracho Acharecha, Shein Hashchina Shura, Elo Al Havadoyim, Shizaro Miuchas Acharov. The Almighty's divine presence does not dwell on those that do not have a sure ancestry. We want to make sure, Shizaro Miyuchas Achrov, that the seed is associated, is attached with its forebears. So that if children, only if children know who their fathers are, then we can say that such a community, such an assembly, such a nation will merit the divine presence. So that from this pasuk, we learn lahavchin bein zaro shel rishon lezaro shel sheni. It's important for us to distinguish between the seed of the first husband and the seed of the second husband. And in order to achieve that distinction, the woman between husband one and husband two must wait 3 months. It takes 3 months for the signs of pregnancy to manifest themselves. Mosiv Rava. Rava raises an objection. If the whole reason for waiting 3 months is only in order to establish who the father is, Lefikach, Ger Vigiores, Tzrichin Lahamtin Shloshe Chadoshim. The Tanaic source that Rava quotes refers to a couple that had converted to Judaism. A non-Jewish couple that convert together. They have to wait 3 months. In other words, they have to separate themselves from one another for 3 months. Hocha, my lahavchin ika. Here, what's the lahavchin? What's the doubt? Who you only have the husband and wife, this couple. There isn't a first husband and a second husband. So why is there the need for them separating from one another and waiting 3 months before they can cohabit once again? The Gemara answers, Hochinami, Iko, here too there is Lahavchin, an element of distinguishing Bein Zera Shenizra B'Kedusha Lezera Sheloi Nizra B'Kedusha, between a impregnation, a pregnancy that was caused in a state of their Kedusha, of their holiness, after having entered the Jewish people, versus a pregnancy that was caused in a state of Shaloi B'Kedusha, in their pre-Jewish state. So it's important for distinction purposes, whether it be between husband one and husband two, or between pre-Jewish state versus post-Jewish state. Rava Omar. Rava has a second approach. Gzeira Shemo Yisa Es Achoisoi Me'oviv V'yibein. And we should point out there are 4 points that Rava makes why it's necessary to wait 3 months. And we'll go through the 4 points of Rava in the Gemara text and then look at Rashi's explanation. So number one is Gzeira Shemo Yisa Es Achoisoi Me'oviv V'yibeim eshes ochiv me'imoi v'yoytzi es imoi lashuk v'yiftar es yivimto lashuk. Now, of course, just looking at the words of the Gemara, one would be hard-pressed to find an explanation other than looking immediately at Rashi. So now we look at the Rashi, a few lines up from here. Rava Omar, Shemo Yisa Achoiso Me'aviv Im Nises Toich Shloisha. If a woman marries a second man within 3 months of her having parted from the first one, and then V'yolda V'hu Ben Tisha L'Rishon V'nolad B'Veso Shelsheni. So if she, let us say, does not wait 3 months and then gives birth, let us say, 7 months later, and in actuality, it's a full-term pregnancy from the first husband. The birth, though, takes place while she's married to the second husband. V'savur shehu beno. The birth having taken place in the house of the second man will lead him to think that this is his actual son. V'yisa es bas Bailo Horishon Shieshlomi Ishwacheris. And this boy might end up marrying a daughter of the first husband that he bore through another woman. If that were actually the case, this boy and that girl are not related to one another. But in reality, this boy is actually a 9-month pregnancy from the first husband, and when he marries that man's daughter that he had from another marriage, you'll have really a brother and sister through common father marrying one another. So that's the first point of Rava, why it's important for us to establish whether or not the woman is pregnant, because otherwise, if you don't wait the 3 months, you can end up having this situation of a brother and sister marrying. The next Rashi, Umiyabem Eishes Ochiv Me'imoy She'im Teled Le'acharoin Ben Acher V'yisa isha v'yomus b'lo bonim. If the second husband has another child, a regular son of his, and that son ends up marrying a woman and not having children and dying without having children, leaving a widow. V'yivmeno zeh. And this one, thinking that he's this boy who was born 7 months after the marriage to the second husband, thinking that he is the son of that second man, hence the brother of this fellow that just died, leaving no children. The nimsum yabem eshes. He'll end up marrying a brother from a common mother. It's the same mother. She left husband one, married husband two, 7 months later bearing this living child. And she also happened to bear a second child with husband number two, quite literally. The living brother thinks that the brother that died is a brother from a common father as well, when that's not the case. They are brothers from a common mother, and marrying the widow of that second son would be an Easter Doraisa of the Chayiv Kores. It's Chayiv the severe Kores penalty. Once again, this all results from her not having waited the 3 months to establish her pregnancy, giving room to think that the first child she bore in the presence of the second husband is from him. The next case that Rava mentioned, the yoytzi es imoy lashut, im loy teled imoy lasheni. If this woman that didn't wait and married the second husband doesn't bear any more children from the second husband, v'yomus, and that second husband dies, uchsvurim shezeh b'no, people will think that this son is his son, v'tinose imo lashuk v'lo chalitza, and the mother, the woman that didn't wait, she'll end up marrying someone else without having received chalitza, without being released when she really needed chalitza. Number 4, v'yiftor es yivimto lashuk. Im yesh lo ach me'oviv horishon, v'lo hoyu loy bonim, umeis. If the first husband had a son, and that son died leaving no children, v'ein shom ach elohu, there is no other brother other than this one, and he thinks that he's the son of the second man. The son of that first man that just died, the son that just died, thinks it's the public thinks that he died leaving no brothers. The widow of the son of that first man, Hazukuka lo, who really is bound to the son that came from the woman not having waited, Nisei Slashut Belo Chalitza, she's going to end up marrying out to the public without having the Chalitza ceremony, which she actually needs. We continue now in the Gemara, Mosiv Rav Chananya. Bikulon ani kori bohen. That means Bikula means regarding all the women that the Chachomim forbade to marry and do yibum within the 3 months. So regarding all of them, ani korei bohen mishum takonas erva. It's designed to solve a problem of erva. The kan mishum takonas vlad. Let's go over what we said just to correct ourselves. We made an error. This source began with the word bekulon. That's a reference to all women that the Chachamim forbid to wed or to do yibum with. All of those forbidden relations are in order to make sure that there is no erva problem. Now, v'kan, this word v'kan indicates the women regarding whom we have the need to wait 3 months. Mishum takonas vlad. That's for the benefit of establishing who the father of the offspring is. The Rashi says v'kan b'hamtona shel gimul chadoshim shosru chachomim l'sha'ar noshim. The takona that has been established regarding other women outside the realm of yibum. Ein kan takonas erva, elo takonas vlad. Lahavchin ben mihu. We continue in the Gemara. Ve'im isa, if it is as we just learned, that the Chachomim were worried about a person ending up marrying a sister from a common father, like we saw under Rava number 1. So if Rava's explanation for the need of waiting 3 months is an explanation that we shall accept, then kulhu mishum takonas erva, the prohibition of a brother and sister marrying one another is an erva problem. Erva is the realm of forbidden relations. So that if Rava's explanation of the need for waiting 3 months is to be accepted, then this source would pose a problem, because this source is saying that the need for waiting is in order to establish who the father is. But the outcome would also be an issue of takonas erva, to prevent a brother from marrying a sister from a common father. The Gemara answers, Hai mishum takonas vlad, the explanation of the words takonas vlad in this source, in fact, is the lo lifga behu erva, so that when the children are born, those children shouldn't come to a problem of erva. So then you might ask, what's the difference between the second part of the Tanaic source and the first part of the Tanaic source? So Rashi explains, the lo lifga vlad be'erva. Rashi continues, avol kol shar ha'ne'esoros, the other prohibited relationships, iko takonas he ubal atzmoi the livku be'erva, where we speak about the prohibition of others doing nisuin or yibum. There, we're interested in preventing the couple themselves from being over, from violating the rules of isurei erva, as opposed to the laws of Hamtona. Those are designed to protect the children from Isurei Erva. Hence the distinction between the Reisha and the Seifa. As we continue in the Gemara, we notice on the side a topic heading and structural note combined, where you'll see a double underline featured. The double underline is one of our series markings. These are Hatzos Acheros, alternative suggestions, Litkufas Amtona, for the term of delay, of pause, or waiting between first husband and second husband, or first man and second man. Loma Omru Dafko Shloisha Chadashim. Why is the figure of 3 months specifically required? the Gemara. Then note that this is a long question. Bishlamo tamtin shnei chadoshim betinose loy. We understand why it would be incorrect to wait 2 months and then marry. Dahainu sveika. This gives rise to the very doubt that we were describing before. If she were to wait 2 months and then give birth 7 months later, that is the doubt. E bar tisha lekama. Is this a 9-month pregnancy from the first husband? And when she cohabited with the second husband, she was in actuality 2 months pregnant. E bar shiva labastra, or it's a 7-month pregnancy resulting from the second husband. So that's why it's clear that we wouldn't allow a woman to marry a second husband after a pause of 2 months. Elo tamtin chodesh echad betinase. Why not have her wait 1 month and then marry? V'i l'shiva yalda, if 7 months later she gives birth, hai bar shiva labasarhu, then it's clearly the second man's child, a child resulting from a 7-month pregnancy. V'i l'tamne yalda, if she gives birth after 8 months, hai bar tisha l'kamahu, then it's clear that it's a 9-month pregnancy. Her having been pregnant 1 month from the first husband, and 8 months later, her giving birth 8 months after she marries the second husband, so this is a 9-month pregnancy from the first husband. Why is that not sufficient? The Gemara answers, Inami letamya yolda, even if she gives birth after 8 months, Ika lemeimar, there is still doubt. There is room to suggest the basra who, it's a child from the second husband. Dilma ishtauye ishta chodesh echod v'aber. It could be that she didn't become impregnated immediately from the second husband, and it took a month for her to become pregnant. Many women don't become pregnant as soon as they marry their husbands. It takes a while. It could take a month till she starts her pregnancy. So a birth 8 months after having married the second husband is not going to show with definitiveness that it's a child from the first husband. Another suggestion. V'tamtin shnei chadoshim u'mechtza v'tinosei. Why should we not allow her to marry the second husband after 2.5 months of waiting? In l'shiva yolda, if 7 months after her marriage to the second husband, she gives birth, hai bar shiva labasra hu. This is a 7-month pregnancy from the second husband. V'i l'shisa upalga yolda, if after a mere 6.5 months after her second marriage she gives birth, hai bar tisha l'kamahu. This is a 9-month pregnancy from the first husband. Di bar basra hu, if it were a pregnancy resulting from the second man, bar shiso paga lo chai, a 6.5-month pregnancy will not live. The Gemara answers, no, there still is an element of doubt. Inami, l'shiso palka yolda, even if she does give birth 6.5 months later, iko l'meimar debasrahu, there's still room to think that it is from the second husband. The Omar Mar, Zutra, afilu l'man di Omar yoledes l'tisha, eino yoledes l'megutoin, even according to the opinion in Maseches Nida, that a woman who gives birth after 9 months, a 9-month pregnancy must be a complete 9 months. That's eino yoledes lemekutoin. She doesn't give birth after a fraction, fractionalized, we'll say 9 months. However, Yolda Lishiva, a 7 month pregnancy, Yoledes Lemekutoyin, does result or does give birth, a 7 month pregnancy does bear a child, even if it's not a complete 7 months. Shinemar, the pasuk indicates such a phenomenon. Vayilut kufois hayomim. This is a pasuk in the context of the birth of Shmuel Hanavi, and it says, after tkufos hayomim, he was born. Miu tkufos shnayim. The term tkufa is often translated as a season. There are four seasons in the year, each one 3 months. So two tkufos would be a total of 6 months. Miu yomim shnayim, the minimum plural of days, when the pasuk says days, so there's the plural. What's the minimum of that? Two. Two is the smallest number of pluralness. So the minimum number of plural of days is two. 6 months and 2 days. So we see that a 7 month pregnancy is simply a complete 6 months plus a little bit. So that the last suggestion would not result in our achieving clarity in the event that she would give birth 6.5 months after her marriage to the second husband, that would not establish that the child is clearly a child of the first man. V'tamtin mashehu v'tinose. Why not have the woman wait a little bit, meaning a week or 2 weeks, and then marry the second husband? And when 3 months go by from her having been with her first husband, we would then check her out, physically check her out. Rashi explains, V'chimolu, on the second wide line under the Gemara text, V'chimolu shloshe chadoshim liyoyim mises baila, 3 months after the death of her first husband, shederech ubor liosnikur, it's at that point that a pregnancy becomes visible. Livdika b'dodeha, check her breasts, kederech noshim, there's a change in the appearance. V'im abro vadei bar kamo, if the difference between a state of pregnancy and a non-pregnancy is visible, so then it's definitely the son of the first. It's a pregnancy from the first man. The bar basrahu, if it were an impregnation from the second man, akati lo havimintar, she hasn't been with the second man for 3 months. It's only 2.5 months that she's been with the second husband, because we're checking her once again 3 months after the death of the first husband. Having waited just a week or two, her tenure with the second husband hasn't reached 3 months. So if something is visible upon this particular checking, it's clear that it's a pregnancy from the first man. Delo molu shlosh chadashim liyisrael. You don't have 3 months from her marriage to the second man. The chosur le'ahu mashu shimtina, that little amount of time, that week or two that she waited, is missing. V'lo mintar, and if the that simen that we just referred to bedodel is not visible, so then and then later on it becomes visible. It's clear as Rashi says, bosrochi mintar vale bar basru. It then would show us clearly that this is a child of the second husband. The Gemara continues, Omar of Safra, Ein Boykin es hanesuois shelo yisganu al balehen. There's a rule, and it's a rule of derech eretz, if you will, that we don't check married women out. We don't subject them to this type of checking, because that will cause their husbands to find disfavor, that it creates a situation of
of marital strain if you do this. Question, v'nivdika v'hilucha, don't subject her to that particular checking that we mentioned. Just watch the way she walks. Rashi explains, v'hilucha, malichin oisa v'ofer tichuach, have her walk over some loose dirt. Imuberes he, if she is pregnant, psiosel nikoros mamikos yeser mishar noshim, the footsteps will leave a deeper impression in the sand, in the dirt, than other women. Shavlad machbida, the child causes increased weight of the woman. The Gemara continues. Why is it that we don't practice this? Once again, waiting just a mashahu from the death of the first husband, waiting a week or two from the death of the first husband. After that, she would then marry. And then 3 months after the death of the first husband, have her walk through the sand. Omar Rami Bar Chamo, Isha Mechapa Atzma, a woman will cover her tracks. Here it's quite literally. She will do something to make sure that her pregnancy is not noticeable. Kidei Shirash Bino B'Nichsei Baila, so that people will get the impression that this is not a child from the first husband, but a child from the second husband, so that ultimately he will inherit from him. At this point then, we've established why the 3 month period of waiting is the necessary amount, and any lessening of that would leave us still in a state of doubt. The Gemara asks another question in this context, but before we do that, we look at the side of the Gemara where we have a Noseya topic heading. Hecha de'ein kan mishum havchona sera. Where you have a situation that there isn't any need to distinguish, to establish who the father is, kegon b'muberes or minika, a case of a woman who's pregnant already, or she's nursing a child, umeis baila, and her husband dies, loma eino yecholu lehischatein miyad, why can't a woman like that marry a second man immediately? The Gemara, hecha dekimlon demuberes he, tinosei, where we know that she is, she's pregnant. So there's no issue of doubt concerning who the father is. Let her marry immediately. Aloma tanya, why then is it taught the following in the Tanaic source, Lo Yisah Adam Uberes Chaveru, Menekes Chaveru, a person shall not marry a woman who is impregnated by someone else or is nursing someone else's child. Ve'im Nosa, and if he does, Yoytzi, Velo Yachzor Lomis. If he does marry her without waiting the necessary amount of time, he must divorce her and never take her back. Why this severity? The Gemara answered, Gzera Shemo Tase Ubra Sandal. If a man marries a woman who is already pregnant, and he impregnates her as well while she's still pregnant, the development of the second child can end up crushing the first child, making him into a sandal, a type of flattened out fetus. The Gemara asks, Ihachi didei nami? Well, if that's the case, then any husband and wife, if the wife is pregnant, why is the husband allowed to cohabit with her? Is there not the problem that she might become pregnant again, and the child will become, the first fetus will become a sandal? The Rashi, three lines from the bottom, says, didei nami? Lo yishamesh im ishto muberes, shemo tachser b'tisabe, v'yitchok Achiv v'imach tsuras panav kesandol hazeh she'en lo tsura. The Gemara answers why, when it comes to a husband and wife, we're not worried about this. I lemandomer v'moich v'moich, I lemandomer min hashamayim yirachamu min hashamayim yirachamu. There are two approaches that is taken to this topic. One is that we will tell the woman when she's pregnant, she is allowed to use a contraceptive. which is generally speaking frowned upon in halacha, but when there is a necessity like this, so we allow her to use that. The moch is technically a piece of highly absorbent material that she inserts into her body that will absorb the semen and not enable her, prevent her from becoming pregnant. In this case, a second pregnancy will not be able to set in. Another approach says that heaven will have mercy and that the couple can, the husband and wife will continue their intimacy and heaven will protect the fetus. So those are two responses that we give when it comes to a husband and wife. But those approaches would not be acceptable with regard to her marrying a second husband. We continue in the Gemara. While it asks that very question, Hochanami, here too, why not allow her? She's pregnant, and it's clear she's pregnant from the first one because 3 months have lapsed. Let her marry a second husband. E leman domar b'moich. B'moich, ve'i l'man d'omar minashamayim rachamu, minashamayim yirachamu. Why can't we accept those approaches to enable her to marry a second man and we'll be able to protect the fetus? Elo, do you know why? Mishum dachasa. We don't want a woman who is pregnant, who's clearly pregnant, to marry a new man, a second husband, because the couple, in the state of intimacy, he might end up crushing the child, the fetus, through body pressure. The Gemara asks, Ihachi, if that is a concern, Didei Nami, a husband and wife, how is it that they are able to engage in intimacy when after she's already pregnant? Is he not going, as the husband slash father not going to crush this fetus? Didei chayas iluya. When it comes to one's own child, he'll be careful. And the Gemara asks, well, hochanami chayas iluya. So too with regard to the second husband, let her remarry in a state of pregnancy, and the second husband will be careful not to crush the child. The Rashi adds to this, Hochanami Chayesiluyo, Sheino de Miskavin Laro Ganefesh. There's no reason for us to think that the second husband will intentionally try to crush the pregnancy that she has from the first husband. So why is it that a pregnant woman, who is again clearly pregnant, and the father is clear that it's the first husband dies, why does she have to wait? Why can't she marry a second husband immediately? Elo stam meuberes lemaniko kaimo. A pregnant woman is assumed to be one who will nurse her newborn. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis. Dilma Iabra Umaakir Chalbo Vekaplole. If she doesn't wait the required amount of time, we're afraid that after she gives birth to the pregnancy that she has right now, she will become pregnant from the new husband. And a woman who becomes pregnant while nursing, that causes the milk supply to dry up, so to speak. And as a result of that, of the milk, we'll say the milk going bad, the child will die. Well, ihachi didei nami, if that be the case, husband and wife that produced a child, why is it that we allow them to continue together in intimacy? Might she not become pregnant again, a second pregnancy, while she's nursing their first child? And the second pregnancy will stop the milk supply, and the child that they had together will die. The Gemara answers, "Didei mimas misolei bebeitzim v'cholov." When it comes to a regular husband and wife couple, and the couple had a child, and they continue cohabiting, and a second pregnancy sets in, and the milk supply of the first child dries up, the father will go out of his way to provide milk alternatives. Today we have all types of nursing formulas. In the Gemara's time, it was a formula made of milk and eggs. So alternative milk supply will be provided. The Gemara asks, "Dido nami mimas misolei bebeitzim v'cholov." Let a woman whose husband died marry immediately in her state of pregnancy. The child will be born. She might become pregnant with a second child from the new husband. Her milk supply will dry up, so the second husband will supply the nursing formula for her first child, the child that she had from the first husband. The Gemara says, "Lo yohav lo baal." The husband, the new husband, it's not his own son, it's not his own child. He's not going to provide sustenance for that infant. It's not his. Question. Velitpeine liyorshim. Why doesn't the woman seek out the finances necessary for providing an alternative milk supply from the heirs? After all, she has a child that was fathered by a man, the first husband. That man died, leaving, left some type of estate. The child is really first in line of inheritance, but he wasn't born when he died, so there's an estate that exists that others took hold of, and she could go turn to them with the claim that you have property that rightfully belongs to this child, and he needs support for providing the formula. And now we have an amazingly insightful, deep recognition of human psyche, and more particularly female psyche, and how far it goes. What was the suggestion just now? Let the woman marry in her state of pregnancy a second man, and as far as the welfare of the child that she had was impregnated with by the first husband, and hence it's the deceased's child, there should be no problem. She should be able to go to court and seek compensation from the heirs. Omar Abaye, Isha Bosha Lavo Lebezdin, Vaho Regis Espino. In order for the woman to extract funds from the other heirs, she'll have to make a court appearance. A woman finds that embarrassing. So much so that she, in order to preserve her own perception of dignity, she will go so far in that capacity, even though the result would be the death of her own son. This is something that we must bear in mind beyond the scope of this particular Daf Gemara. The concept of dignity and of shame, and how far that could drive a person. There is much more to say on the topic, but in the confines of a Daf Yomi Shir, we must continue. Achas Besulos V'Achas Be'ulos. The Mishnah went on to say echad nesuos ve'echad v'achas arusos. All kinds of women must wait, whether they are virgin or whether they have been already in intimacy with a man, whether they're divorced, whether they're widowed, whether they're nisuos, whether they became widowed from a state of nisuin, from a state of having consummated their marriage, the echad arusos, or whether they had not consummated their marriage. The Gemara feels that there is an element of redundancy in the Mishnah. Hey nihu besulos, vehei nihu arusos. These two categories are really one in the same. A besula is a virgin woman. You can't have the case of a virgin, let's say, Yavoma, if not for her becoming a Yavoma through the death of her husband while she was still an Arusa. An Arusa, and we've said this many times in the past, is the first of two stages that lead to full marriage. An Arusa is a situation where the couple have married one another. Sometimes the term betrothed is used. Money was given by the man to the woman. She becomes what's known as an ashesi. She's considered married, but they haven't consummated their marriage through intimacy yet. So an arusa that happens to be a vama would also be a basula. She's still a virgin. So why does the Mishnah use the term basulos and arusas when one term would have been enough? Likewise, hei nihu beulos vehei nihu nesuos. The term bulos is a reference to a woman that has already consummated their marriage. So is that not one in the same with a nisua? Bulos literally means a woman that has experienced intimacy. So what kind of woman would become a yavoma having experienced intimacy if not for the fact that she happens to be a nisua? She had consummated her marriage with the first husband. So why the double expression? Omar Rav Yehuda, Hochi Komar. The Mishnah is to be understood thusly. Before we continue in the text itself, let's look at the Rashi. We're looking in the Rashi in the upper part of the narrow lines. Hochi Komar, Klomar. Lo tisni achas achas. Don't include the words achas. As you see, the term achas appeared a number of times in the original Mishnah text. So don't read the Mishnah like that. The mashma trei mili, because the word achas each time appears to separate, causing a separate category. Elokula chado katoni. Rather, it's to be understood as one lengthy sentence. Ufirushe komaforesh. And what the Mishnah is doing is it is explaining itself. Achas vesulos v'achas bulos. That's the headline of the Mishnah. Ukagon shenis armalu oynis garshu bein mino erusin dainu besulos. The term besulos that opens this section of the Mishnah is explained by the continuation of the Mishnah. For example, what would a besula be? Well, it would be a case where she became widowed or divorced from the state of erusin. Bein mino nisuin. Or if she became divorced or widowed from the state of nisuin, that is the hainu bulos. That is what the term bulos was referring to in the beginning of the Mishnah, that section of the Mishnah. So now we go back to the Gemara text where this appears. Omar Yehuda hochi komar. Understand the Mishnah thusly: achas besulos va'achas bulos, whether they be virgin or non-virgin. She nisarmelu oy shenisgarshu bein mino erusin bein minanesuin. The bein mino erusin, namely became widowed or divorced from their original erusin state, that would be the explanation of busulos. Whether they became widowed or divorced from the state of nisuin, that explains buulos. Continuing in the Gemara,
Rabbi Elazar lo ermu lebei midrasha. On one occasion, Rabbi Elazar did not go to the base medrash, to the place of Torah study. Ash chel Ravasi. So he met up with Ravasi. Omar le, Rabbi Elazar asks, my omur rabbonon bebei midrasha. What did the rabbi say today in the base medrash? Omar le, hochi omur Rabbi Yochanan. So Ravasi tells him, thusly said Rabbi Yochanan, halacha kerebi Yosi. The halacha follows the ruling of Rabbi Yosi that all women can enter nisuin immediately. Enter erusin, a very important correction there. Enter erusin immediately. Before we continue in the Gemara, we should just note that we have a topic heading on the side that say, Birur Psak Shel Rabbi Yochanan. We're trying to clarify Rabbi Yochanan's ruling. Haim hu posek Rabbi Yosi dematir l'chol anoshim nis'ares miyad. Does he, Rabbi Yochanan, actually rule like Rabbi Yosi that allows all women to enter erusin with a new husband immediately without any need for a waiting period? Now, let us also look at the Rashi. Halachic Rabbi Yosi, Rashi across from here, a couple lines up, he says, Deshori arusos linose, Rabbi Yosi also allows a woman who became either divorced or widowed from a state of erusin with her first husband, she can enter nisuin with a second husband immediately. Since she had not cohabited with the first husband, so there's no doubt or suspicion of zera, of seed, of child being from the first man. She was only in arusa with him. Another point of Rabbi Yosi is nisua le'ores. Rabbi Yosi rules that a woman who had been a nisua, she can enter erusin with a second husband immediately. Because in that situation, we're not getting into a problem of havchona zera. All we're allowing her to do is the first stage of marriage with the new husband. V'haydenokha Rabbi Yosi v'lo Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda nami shori arusa linose v'hedya, el mishum the Rabbi Yosi nimuko imo. Rashi points out that in truth we could have had a ruling like Rabbi Yehuda and come to the same conclusion, who allows an arusa to enter nisuin immediately. But we prefer to cite Rabbi Yosi as the source of psak, because when Rabbi Yosi appears, the halacha will follow his ruling. Because nimuko imo, he rules after deep thought and sources for his rulings. So now we continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan ruled like Rabbi Yosi. That's what Rav Asi told Rabbi Elazar. Michlal, should we infer from here the Yechida Polig Ole, that the Tanakama, the first opinion in the Mishnah that argues with Rabbi Yosi, that insisted on all women, whether they had been in a state of erusin or nisuin with their first husbands, they cannot make any new marriage move until the waiting period is experienced. So that opinion, which appeared without a name, we should assume, and this is what he is asking, this is what the Gemara is raising as a question, should we then assume that that opinion, we'll call it the restrictive opinion, is really the opinion of a single rabbi, as opposed to a type of ruling of the chachomim, of the a majority type ruling? In other words, for Rabbi Yochanan to paskin like Rabbi Yosi, it would indicate that the alternative opinion was really a single opinion of a single rabbi and not a majority opinion. Otherwise, it would be difficult to accept a ruling like a Shitas Yochid over a rabbin. So, by virtue of Rav Yochanan passing the Rav Yossi, would lead us to believe that the alternative pshat was a Yochidah. Yochidah means single opinion.
The Gemara says, in, that is correct. V'hatanya, and we will now show that through the following brisa. Once again, we're going to see in this brisa the concept of waiting as applying across the boards as the opinion of, we'll see, Rabbi Meir, who is a single opinion. And hence, the opinion that differs with him, which we'll see, is Rabbi Yossi, who allows an entrance into a second state of matrimony immediately. In fact, Rabbi Yossi is then arguing only with Rabbi Meir, making it much easier to paskin like Rabbi Yossi, being that it's Rabbi Yossi against another single authority, not a majority opinion. So here is the brisa. Hare shoysu redufa leilech lebei sovia. A woman who was very commonly by her father. We're talking about a married woman who was not with her husband. Rashi says redufa regila. Redufa means on a regular basis. Vegam somuch lemisasoi om de lebei sovia. And also close to the death of her first husband, she wasn't with him. She was by her father's Zman Ruba a long time. The Lekola Mema Beresi, leaving no room for thinking that she might be pregnant. So you have a description of a woman that's not hasn't been with her husband for quite a while. Oy, the text continues, Oy Shahayala Kasbeis Baila, or she was fighting with her husband and then she wasn't going to be in a state of intimacy with him. Or her husband was incarcerated in a beis asurim, in a prison. Or the husband was aged or infirmed. Or she was sickly, not capable of becoming pregnant at the time that her husband died. Oh, she pila achar misas by the or. After her first husband died, we know she had a miscarriage. Oh, shoysa akora, or she was a barren woman, where barren as a result of her akora, her uterus having been extracted from her. Oh, zikena, or she's aged. Oh, ktana, or she's a minor. Oh, islandess, a woman who is an islandess is a woman who is born with female defects, and therefore she is not capable of bearing a child. Oshena ruya lele, or because of some other reason, because of having taken some type of poison or illness, she lost her abilities of procreation. Kulan srichas lahamtin gimel chadoshen divrei meir. All of these women that you can see, there's really no chashash. There's no suspicion that she might be pregnant, but we will not allow them, after leaving their first husband, to marry a second man unless 3 months lapse. Rabbi Yossi matir li'ores v'linose miyad. Rabbi Yossi, as we already mentioned extensively earlier, he allows for an erusin. That is, for a woman that was a nesua, he will allow erusin immediately. And for a woman that was merely an arusa, to marry a second man immediately without any waiting. Omer Pchio bar Abba, Chozar boy Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Pchio informs us that Rabbi Yochanan reversed his ruling. He reversed his ruling like Rabbi Yossi. Omer of Yosef, if it is so that Rabbi Yochanan reversed his ruling, it's because of a Tanaic source that was taught in Kerem Biavne. Yavne was the seat of great Torah learning, and the sages there used to sit in rows, row after row, giving the impression of a vineyard. And the word karmo or kerem is a vineyard. So the analogy is to a vineyard because of the fact that they sat in rows. So what was the source that was taught there? Desanya. Omer Bishmoel Benosh Rabbi Yochanan Broika. Shomati Mipi Chachomim Bekerem Biavna. I heard from the sages in the yeshiva of Yavne. Kulon Srichois Lahamtin Shloisho Chadoshim. All women between first husband and second husband, regardless of circumstances, must wait 3 months. And that's not like Rabbi Yossi. Omer Le Rabbi Yirmiyo L'Rabbi Zriko. Ki Ailis L'Kameh De Rabbi Avo Rami Le. When you visit Rabbi Avo, present the following seeming contradiction. Rami Le has raised the following difficulty to him. The question here, you notice, is takes a couple of lines to develop. Mi Omer Rabbi Yochanan Halachik Rabbi Yossi. Would Rabbi Yochanan have ever ruled that the halachs like Rabbi Yossi, that all women yisarsu, that all women can enter after having been married to a first husband, all women will allow all women to enter Erusin with a second husband? The logic behind that type of ruling is, like we've seen before, is that Erusin is a first stage of marriage where they are not yet experiencing intimacy. They're not cohabiting with one another. So that with that mindset, you're not really entering any halachic problems or any, let's say, more than halachic problems, any problems in reality of havchona zera, of confusion regarding who the father might be. But does Rabbi Yochanan rule like that, that all women can enter a state of erusin with a second husband, with immediately? The Omer Rabbi Yochanan halacha kistam mishnah, but Rabbi Yochanan, the same Rabbi Yochanan, has been known to rule like the unnamed mishnah, the mishnah that appears without a name. And generally speaking, a stam mishnah, a nameless mishnah, is an authoritative source. And what does it say in this nameless mishnah? Utnan kol hanoshim lo yinasu velo yisarsu. Well, that's what we learned in the Mishnah, that all women shall not even enter a state of erusin until the 3 month waiting period lapses. So how can Rabbi Yochanan rule like Rabbi Yossi, who doesn't acknowledge a 3 month waiting period for erusin, and the Stam Mishnah that insists on the 3 month waiting period? How can we resolve these two rulings of Rabbi Yochanan? The Gemara answers, Omar Lay. So we have, in this story, we had Rabbi Yirmiyah telling Rabbi Zrika to raise this question to Rabbi Avo. So then Rabbi Avo responds. He says, De Rama Locha, whoever raised this issue with you, in other words, whoever put you up to asking this question, lochosh lekimche, he's not, here will literally translate it, means he's not careful about his flour. But that's simply an analogy. Flour is something, is wheat that's finely ground. So someone who's described as lochosh lekimche means he doesn't analyze his learning, his Torah learning, thoroughly. Rabbi Avo continues to explain. Notice, of course, this is a long answer. He continues saying, it's true that there is a Stam Mishnah that says that no woman shall enter Erusin between first husband and second husband unless a 3 month waiting period lapses. That's a Stam Mishnah, however. It's a stam v'achar kach machloikis hi. It's a stam mishnah followed by this topic being taught as part of a controversy. And when you have a situation like that, that a point is mentioned in a nameless, unqualified fashion, but later it's followed by a mishnah in which that point is presented as the subject of controversy, V'ein halacha k'stam, the halacha will not go like the stam. So even though this stam mishnah presents something of, say, of stringency, of requiring the waiting period, it is not a convincing source by way of a final halachic ruling, because, as we said, it's followed by a machlokes. The Omer of Papa, Bitema Rav Yochanan. Rav Papa, some versions have Rav Yochanan teaching the following rules of psak, of legal decision making. Machlokes v'achakach stam halachakach stam. If you have a mishnah in which a particular point is taught as the subject of controversy, and then one of those opinions is presented later in a nameless source, then the halacha goes like the stam. However, if you reverse the order, stam v'achakach machlokes, if you have a particular point taught in a nameless, seemingly authoritative fashion in one source, and then later, we'll say later in that tractate, the same topic comes up but is part of a controversy, ein halacha kestam, then the halacha will not follow the stam. And that's what we have over here. Therefore, as far as the psak of Rabbi Yochanan, with which we opened up our Gemara, namely Rabbi Yochanan ruling like Rabbi Yossi, that remains a fairly solid position to take. Mistamech Basel Rabbi Avo, Akasvei de Rabbi Nochum Shamei. Rabbi Avo was walking along and leaning on the shoulder of Rabbi Nochum, his servant, his shamish. Mankit v'ozil hilchasa minei. Rashi says, Mankit malakit mimenu halachas psukos, halachat kaploni aploni. It seems that Rabbi Nochum was drawing out of Rabbi Avo all kinds of halachic rulings. Bomine, he asks, Machlokis v'achakach stamai. What would be the case if you have something taught in a Mishnah as part of a controversy, then it's followed by one of those positions presented in a subsequent Mishnah in a nameless fashion? How are we to rule? Amalei halacha kistam. Just like we saw before, that in such a case, since the stam follows the machlokes, the stam carries the day. You would rule like the stam source. Stam v'achakach machlokes. My, what happens in a reverse situation? Amalei ein halacha kistam. So a case like that, the halacha will not follow the stam. A third question. Stamo de masnisinu machlokes bebraiso mai. What about a case where a Mishnah teaches something in an unqualified fashion, and that point turns out to be a controversy in a braisa? What is the din? Amalei halacha kistam. We will follow the Mishnah that presented the issue in a nameless, unqualified fashion. A fourth question. Machloikis b'masnisin ustamo b'braisamai. What about a situation where, as far as the Mishnayas are concerned, a particular point of halacha is taught as a controversy, two opinions regarding the matter? And in a braisa, we see one of those positions presented in a nameless, seemingly authoritative fashion. In other words, from the perspective of the Mishnayos, the issue was not settled. When you learn the braisa is a body of Tanaic literature that was not formulated directly by Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, but rather was formulated and edited by the next generation, or his students, or colleagues, student-colleague type individuals. They include famous people like Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Oshaya, Bar Kapora, and Levi. So if you have a situation where a particular point is part of a machlokes in the Mishnayos, namely, the Mishnayos in the Mishnayos, which were edited by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, there is no seeming clear ruling. And yet, clarity is reflected in a braisa. What is the outcome of that. Omar Lay, so Rabbi Avo answers that a situation like that is somewhat untenable, if you will. But he says, "V'chi Rabbi Lo Shana, Rabbi Chiyam and Ayalo." If Rabbi, who set up the Mishnayos, didn't teach that, Rashi goes a little further and says on the top, Rabbi should see there as a Mishnah Lo Shana Shtei Mishnah Shelo Ratzel Sosma. Rabbi, the great Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, for whatever reason he had, felt he doesn't want to present that point in a conclusive fashion. So if Rabbi didn't present it like that, how could his student, Rabbi Chiya, come up with that conclusion and conclusive ruling? So again, V'chi Rabbi Lo Shon, if Rabbi didn't teach it, Rabbi Chiya and I, where did Rabbi Chiya get it from? In other words, it's a way of saying that you have a situation of something lacking authority. So even though it's presented in a brisa authored by Rabbi Chiya in a stam fashion, it is not, that's not convincing. Up till this point, we have been impressed with the conclusiveness of a Stam Mishnah. We're now going to bring this into question. On the side of the Gemara text, you can see we have a long question marking. On the other, in the margin, you see we have a subtopic heading. Tainus Rabbi Yochanan, the Mishnah Mimaseches Kelim, the Inyan Masreik, Shenireis Kistam Mishnah, Eino Mishnah. We're going to see a Tanaic source from Maseches Kelim regarding a Masreik. A Masreik is a comb. And it appears as a Stam Mishnah, and later we're going to see that it's not a Mishnah. In other words, it's not something you can rely on. There's a term that the Gemara will use. Eino Mishnah means something that you can't rely on. So just to go over that last point with greater clarity, we're going to see a Stam Mishnah involving a Masreik. And the Gemara will end up telling us that the halacha will not follow that Mishnah, indicating that the rule of halacha kistam is not something that you can really rely on. In response to that, it will be said over in the name of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish that that particular Mishnah of Masreik is not a reliable source. So that when you have Mishnayos that are considered authoritative and they appear in a Stam fashion, you will rule like them. In this particular case, we have a Mishnah that itself has a weakness to it, and hence it's termed Eino Mishnah. The Gemara. Amalei, Fahotnan, do we not have the following? Now, if we try to follow the pronouns in this, Amalei, he said to him, so it would appear that you have Rabbi Nochum raising a question, presenting a question to Rabbi Avo, and saying that after all these rules that you've said, what about the following situation? V'atnan, we have the following Stam Mishnah, and after the framed section, you'll see the Gemara is saying, that we don't follow this particular source, even though it's Stam. So now we get into the details. The Mishnah says, Masreik, and we have a double underlining, highlighting the two different kinds of Masreik, of combs that are used for combing flax, combs that are used for, that's Pishton, and combs that are used for Tzemer, that for combing wool. Masreik shel pishton shenidlu shinov v'nishtayru bo shtayim tameos, a comb that most of its teeth have been removed but two remain tameos. That means that it's still considered fit as a utensil, as a kli, and since it's still fit for use, it's capable of becoming tamei, or if it was tamei, it remains tamei. The achas tahora, if there remains only one tooth in this comb, so it is no longer considered useful, and hence it will not be able to become tamei. V'kulon shenitlu achas b'fnei atzmon tameos. All that have teeth that were removed in a staggered fashion, those kind of combs are still useful. We must correct ourselves. There was a mistake we just made. That's kulon shenitlu achas b'fnei atzmon tameos means the teeth of the comb have been removed and they're not attached to the original comb itself, but they just have teeth, separate teeth. Those are tomei. They are considered useful. They have a function, and hence they're subject to the rules of tuma, of ritual impurity, if that be the case. Shel tsemer shenitlu shinov achas mibeintayim tohar. A woolen comb that whose teeth were missing in a staggered fashion. That's nitlu shinov achas mibeintayim, one between the other. Rashi says achas mibeintayim shemikol shloisha asmuchos, from any section of three successive teeth, so nitlohem soyas, the middle one was removed. So for every group of three teeth, the middle one removed, that's tor. It's not fit for its original design function to function as a wool comb. Nishtayr bo shloisha b'mokom echo tomei. If three teeth remain in the comb in a successive fashion without any gaps, so the comb is tomei. Hoiso hachitzoino achas mehen tor. If the outer comb, the outer tooth, that is, of these three, we have three teeth that remain in a wool comb, but one of those three happens to be the outermost tooth, which is generally wider, thicker than the others. So that it, even though you have three teeth remaining in this wool comb, three successive teeth, one of them is the chitzona. So it is no longer functional as a wool comb. Therefore, tor. Nitlu shnayim v'ason l'milket. If you took two teeth out of this comb and made it into a type of, say, tweezers, tameos. So they function. They're functional, and then they are subject to Kabbalah's tuma. Achas v'skin l'nero l'mituach tameo. One isolated tooth of a wool comb that you established, you set aside for cleaning out candles, or for mituach. Rashi says, Lifroish beged kein achayotim shemoischim oros b'masmerim. He would use this tooth in lieu of a nail or a peg in order to stretch materials, like people that are preparing skins will attach the skin in a taut fashion in order to stretch it out through the use of these pegs or nails, and in this case he's using the tooth of the comb in that capacity. So since it's functional, so it's tomei, it's subject to Kabbalah's tuma, as is a kli. So we just finished reading a Tanaic source with a fair amount of detail regarding two different kinds of combs and their teeth, and there's no name in the source. And yet, we hold that halacha does not follow this Tanaic source. So, is that not a problem for that which we said before, that a Stam Mishnah is to be relied upon for following as the halacha? Omar Lei, so Rabbi Avos says back to Rabbi Nochum, he says, Bar Mino Dahi. Besides that Mishnah, the Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish Damitravayo Zu Eino Mishnah. This source regarding the comb is simply an unauthoritative, it's lacking authority, and then hence it doesn't pose a problem to our rules of psak, of halakhic decision making. And now the Gemara goes through a number of stages, and we have triangles used to highlight these stages. And on the side under the Mivneh heading, these are Nisyonos, attempts to hasbir my time on Rabbi Yochanan Zuena Mishnah. What is weak about this? What is lacking in this source that leads Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish to say that this is an unreliable source? My time. As we go through the Gemara, we mentioned there are three sources, but at each stage, after stage one and stage two, the Gemara will show how whatever objection is being raised is really not an objection. Omar Rabbi Avo, Omar Rav Huna Bar Manoch. And in response to the question of my time, or why is this called an Eino Mishnah, so Rav Huna Bar Manoch says in the name of Mishmei Rabbi Idi, Rav Idi Brei Rav Ika, Mishum the Kashi Reisha L'Seifa. There is a inherent contradiction between the beginning, the early part, and the latter part of the source. The Kotari. It says in this source, Shel Tzemer, Shenitlu Shinov Achas Mi Beintayim Tohor. A wool comb where one tooth was removed from between two other teeth, so it's incapable of being Mekabel Tuma. If two teeth would remain in a continual fashion, one next to the other, so then we would infer that it's capable of being mekabel tuma. The reason that the Mishnah described the nidlu shino v'asmitayim as tohor is because of that very phenomenon. You didn't have any succession of two teeth. But if two successive teeth remained in place, it would be considered functional, hence tome. V'hodar toni, and then in the same source you say, nishtayru bo gimel tome, that if three teeth remain in succession, then it's makabel tuma, and we would infer from that gimel in shtayim loy, that if only three remain in succession, it's mekabel tuma, but if two, that's not enough. So, follow the dashed underlining. The line before, we dashed underlined shtayim b'mokam echad, tome. Here, shtayim, lo, not. It's inherently contradictory. Umay kusha. The Gemara responds and says, how does this demonstrate any difficulty? Dilma, maybe ha begavyaisa, ha bebaraisa. It depends on which teeth we are talking about. As far as the detailed explanation of gavyaisa and braisa, Rashi has a lengthy explanation. He actually has two different explanations, and he prefers the second one. And that the comb described here has two rows of teeth. One an inner row and one an outer row. And depending on which row it is, the standard will be different. So that there is no contradiction. Two teeth that are successive will be functional if it's one of those rows. And two teeth in succession will not be tomei if it's the other kind of row. Elo mehacha. Rather, from the following, the Gemara goes on, we will see that the source is problematic. Tikotani, it's said in the source, V'kulon shenitlu achas achas b'fnei atzmo tameos. All of these, that the teeth were removed from the comb, and you have isolated individual teeth, so they are tameos. They're subject to kabbalas tuma. Even if you didn't designate it for a particular function. Ema Seifa. And then you continue reading the source, and it says, Achas Veskino Lenero Lemituach Tmeo. If you have an isolated tooth of a comb, and you designated it for cleaning out candles, or for stretching materials as a peg, then it's Mekabel Tumah. And then we would infer, Hiskino Yin Lo Hiskino Lo. Only if you designated it, giving it significance and functionality, then it's Mekabel Tumah. But if you didn't designate it, you have just an isolated comb, or tooth of a comb, it wouldn't be Mekabel Tumah. Now, 2 lines ago, we said, it is Mekabel Tumah. Here we're saying that only if it's Hiskino would have been Mekabel Tumah. If not, it's not Mekabel Tumah. That would be contradictory. And that would show that the source is unreliable. Omar Abaye, Umay Kushya. What's the problem over here? There's no problem. Dilma haba katayu, haba lo katayu. Maybe it all depends on whether the tooth is still in the case, the frame of the comb, or it's literally an isolated tooth that's been disconnected from the from the holder, from the comb holder. In other words, you have teeth of a comb that are set into something called a kat. The kat being the handle that holds the teeth. So that if, as right now, Rashi explains that if you have the kat with a single tooth in it, that doesn't need any special designation. It has significance, it has some functionality. However, if you have an isolated tooth removed from the comb, then you need to have it designated in order for it to be Mekabel Tumah. Omar Apapa, Umay Kushir, Apapa has his resolution. The Dilma Haba Katinta Haba Alinta. Maybe a distinction can be made, he says, between a Katinta, is a very fine tooth, versus a thick type of tooth. The Rashi says, Alinta avois ve'enom tsrichos beis yad. The thicker tooth it doesn't need a handle. Whereas a thinner one would need a handle. So once you can see room for making a distinction, therefore there is no contradiction. One section refers to one situation, the other section refers to the other situation. Elo, stage 3, the reason that the source that we saw in the second line from the top, the Masreik source, is not considered authoritative, even though it appears as a stam, is Elo Mishum de Mesaimi Bo Davkoni Zudivre Rabbi Shimon. The experts in Mishnayos, the Davkoni, these are people that are very careful and precise in their Mishnayos learning. They attach as a sign off to the source that this is in accordance with Rabbi Shimon. So it doesn't qualify as a Stam Mishnah to begin with. And therefore, the original rule that Halacha will be like a Stam Mishnah, that still holds. As far as the case of Masreik and you're telling us that we don't follow its ruling, that doesn't pose any question to our rules of Psak, because this is not an example of a Stam Mishnah to begin with. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.